what kind of person was Jeffrey and is Jeffrey Bradstreet?
Well, like I said at the tribute today, he was just a great person that really cared about people. I asked him one time what he wanted to do, and when we were talking about a TV show called Star Trek, right? Star
yep.
Trek?
That's
and he wanted to be all three of them, so he wanted to be this captain, this leader of the ship. He wanted to be the science officer, and he also wanted to be the medical officer. And I think he was that to all people.
Yeah.
He treated people as their, and not as patients, but as family. Gave to people selflessly, gave his time, his money, his resources, things like that. And he didn't always want to be a medical doctor. He really went to college at the University of Central Florida to be a research scientist. So a lot of that passion that fed what he did in autism was originally from that wanting to be a researcher.
Yeah.
And then I think because he had his own child with autism, he treated everybody like a parent,
yeah.
You know, like they were his own children. So it was a great practice that he had when he treated people.
He was, I mean, there's a bunch of fabulous doctors that treat autism, but he was known to always do the cutting edge and was always coming out with new treatments. And I do believe, as a parent, first, his passion is what drove him to just continue
right.
and to continue to find the cure. But he was just, people adored him. He was a brilliant man.
Right, we were talking about that today. Where would the world of autism be if Jeff wasn't ever in it? You know, because he spearheaded IVIG treatment, secretin treatment, minerals, enzymes, just about everything that was out there that came into the autism world first came through Jeff.
Right.
So I don't know where we'd be.
Why did he go after autism?
He has a child with autism.
Matthew
yeah.
was diagnosed when he was 3 and a half with mm-hmm. autism. And he already had a medical practice, but that's when the Good News Doctor Foundation was formed. We were living down there with them, and him and Tom opened that up, and that's where we started seeing children. And actually, at that time, I mean, we would have people from all over the world
right.
because he was, again, being a researcher at heart. He just dove right into it and was doing treatments and having really good success. So that's why it all started, was for the love of his son.
Well, I mean, to back up a little bit, at 15 months, a normal little boy that was rambunctious
yeah.
and full of life got the MMR and was significantly impacted from that point. And he had several other vaccines after that. So answer your question originally, he got into it because his own child was wounded from the MMR vaccine. Yeah, I don't think one can ever recover from that. And it's doubly difficult for a doctor because he should have known, right? He's a doctor.
That's what people think.
Yeah, you know, he's a medical doctor. It's his child. He should have read all the information that was out there. Instead, he trusted the manufacturers of the vaccine.
Did you see him go through that turmoil?
I think he...
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely... I mean, it impacted the family significantly. But I feel that instead of... I don't know if dwelling is the right word. He just turned passionately to right something that was wrong, to find the cure
right.
and to treat his son. So actually it turned into really good energy, if you will, that he was determined to do something about it. And all the parents, though, that we meet, they're just so passionate. And as any parent would be for their children, that's where their determination and passion comes from, you know?
Well, I think also as a medical doctor, he knew that he had little time to react.
Yes.
So
yeah.
he didn't have time to be sad about it or you know, waste time and energy on the pain and suffering. I talked to him about it a lot early on, and he was always focused on getting Matthew well.
Yeah.
And he believed that was possible, that he could do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. his whole motto with his patients, like when you talk to his patients, is never give up. And he truly, he never did. He never gave up. It was always, you know, research, try the treatment, continue the treatment, but he was always going forward. You know, he never stayed. That's the big thing about Jeff at the conferences is everybody knew every year he would have something new. It was never right. just the same old stuff. So the amount he researched was amazing to me. He was definitely a huge researcher, and he fulfilled his passion of what he really wanted to do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you asked us, did he accomplish that, I think. Matthew became well, but he wasn't who he would have been if he didn't have the MMR.
Right.
You know, he's clearly in a different person than he would have been without it. But he's functioning. He's in college. He graduated from high school. He's got a quick, unique sense of humor. So, you know, he's doing very, very well.
Yes.
You have to remember, you know, when we started this in 1996, there wasn't a whole lot of information out there. The internet was very obscure.
Yeah.
You know, so it was very difficult to communicate to parents. And for parents that received a diagnosis, it was extremely difficult for them because they were, like, in this their own little world. Now, one of the blessings of the internet, there's so much data. I mean, you can watch all of Jeff's videos, all of his, all on YouTube, and all of the CME
and the
classes and all of his papers. So there's a lot of opportunity for people to react faster, quicker to their child's needs.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. And then now thinking about, what you guys experienced. And so then when your brother passed, I mean, tell me about the process that you guys went through. Like, when where were you? How did you find out the news? What happened?
Well, I was at a camp, a Christian camp for our kids, and my brother called me and said, my older brother, David, called me and said that Jeff had committed suicide. Because that's what the initial report came in. That he had had a altercation with the FDA and the DEA and the CDC in Atlanta. They had come into his office and done an investigation inquiry into some of the medical practices and products that he was doing there, and that following day that he had decided to take his own life. My initial reaction was, absolutely no way. But, I mean, I've known my brother for 60 years, well, 59 at the time. And, I mean, we stayed in the same bedroom for 17 years. We were in ministry together through the Good News Doctor. I knew him very well, and he would never... Because here's the interesting thing. You know, he had, in 2015, in May of 2000, here... May of 2015, on the 22nd, I think it was, he did a great talk of the future, that we're close to getting to the end of this journey that he had been on.
Yeah.
So he was excited. That was very close. And he was like this captain of the ship, you know, and for him to stop that close and just go, you know what, I'm worried, I'm upset, I'm done with it, and commit suicide was just impossible.
Future.
To believe or accept. So we started an investigation into it, trying to find out exactly what happened and the things that happened the last week of his life, and found out many things about that weren't true, that we were told initially were true.
Right, and particularly about the DEA investigation.
Right.
You know, as always, it got blown out of proportion that it was like this huge raid. So you picture these, you know, SWAT and all that. And it wasn't that at all. And actually, they've already posted online the warrant. And it was for a product called GCMAF, Well, there was none in the office. He had stopped using it in February, confirmed that with several of his patients, and there was none in the office. And furthermore, they didn't shut down his office, they didn't freeze bank accounts, they didn't take his license, because that was going around. And actually, even today, I was asked about that. So it's still, you know, that untruth is still out there, and we want that cleared up, because that isn't at all what happened. Yes, they did go in there.
Right.
They found nothing, but there wasn't something so traumatic that would cause him to take his life, and that's what people kept tying the two together, that, oh, his life was over and he just checked out. No, the Jeff Bradstreet, we all know, would not do that.
Yeah, there was quite a campaign to make him out to be a quack.
Yes.
And those are people that never had him as a doctor or knew him personally or professionally for that matter.
Or read all of his documented medical research papers.
You know, I think the first stage of what happened with Jeff, they were trying to discredit him and his research because of the fact that he was actually getting damaged kids. Well,
and he was having a very, and actually in his lecture last year, he never used the word cured. He liked to say recovered. And he was having significant recovery rates with children with autism.
Right.
They were extremely high.
Yes, they were. Very
right.
High.
Yeah, out of his own mouth, I think he said there was 80%.
I believe so.
80% success rate with it. This is at the last Autism One conference.
And I believe there was over 1,000 as well.
Yes.
There were, I believe it was 1,100, actually, patients. And so he, and the title of his lecture was How Close Are We to a Cure? And we actually spoke to a gentleman that saw Jeff last year, and he said in the hallway, Jeff had even said to him, he said, we are so close.
Mm-hmm.
We are so close to a cure. So to go from that and then people trying to say he just checked out at such a time where he was so close doesn't make sense. And you know, and we're not just basing that, though, off of our feelings or knowing Jeff, you know, forensically through the investigation. We also have that. So
what was that?
That he did not commit suicide.
How was that suggested?
That he did commit suicide?
Yeah, that he didn't. Like, as in, how did the forensic indicate that?
Unfortunately, we're going to have to keep some of this confidential because there still is an ongoing investigation, you know. But I can tell you that we had a private forensic scientist go down to North Carolina, met with the medical examiner that did the autopsy, spent probably 3 or 4 hours with him, and came back with a report that showed that it just didn't make any sense, and it was impossible for to add all the things that they were alluding to that he could have done that to commit suicide. You know, just the way the body was, the way the bullet wound was, the fact that there was no tattooing on the body, there was no powder burns. There was none of that that would have been point-blank range or, you know, an inch or two away. It's not like it was some accident. Jeff was, you know, knowledgeable of weapons. He was a captain in the Air Force. His weapon of choice as a pilot would have been a handgun. They would have been in their survival vest. So he was well-trained with a weapon. It wasn't anything that he would have just, you know, fumbled out of his pocket and accidentally shot himself.
I understand. I appreciate you sharing that. And so, and it's really great to get the truth out on this man. And I just, again, am just, we come back to what it was like for him to say it was so close. And I see, Candace, with you, there's something about that where you saw his dream, his aspiration, you saw him pushing towards that and being so excited about being so close to that. And then to have that dream taken away and then his life as well. It hit you, didn't it?
Yeah. Because, you know, we still are in contact with so many of his patients, and you feel helpless, even though, you know, and what I mean by helpless is where do they go? And again, there's a lot of tremendously wonderful doctors out there, but Jeff's protocol was so specific, and he was just so brilliant at individualizing the protocol that you can't duplicate that. So it's just very hard because, you know, autism has always been a part of our life. Jeff taught me so much, and who I am as far as like naturopathically and researching and who I am today is because of working with him. And he taught me so much, and that I was able to pass on to others and also for my family. And it's hard because I can't just, you know, call up and say, you know, what do we do for this or what about this? Because he was always there, and he was always there for his patients. So to not be able to direct them somewhere and to continue to help them is very hard. It's very hard because we feel their pain. You know, we don't have children with autism, but Matthew, at the time when he was diagnosed, I helped take care of him a lot, and we didn't have children, and he's the sole reason I wanted children. He's just such a part of me. So,
We have three children that don't have autism that I'm sure would have because of all the things that, you know, health reasons that would have attributed to the fact that we had kids that were predisposed. We would have had, our son, I'm sure would have had autism, but we don't have it.
Because of the, there are the predispositions and things that he's talking about, why he says that. So, you know, Jeff just made a huge impact, obviously, on our life and our family. And it's a tragedy that he's gone, you know, for so many people. But the encouraging and great thing is that there are doctors that are going to carry on his legacy.
Right.
And we're so thankful for that.
You know, Jeff worked really close with Andy Wakefield, and it's exciting to see this movie Vax to come out. You know, we're really excited to see it, be a part of it. And I think it's going to educate people and allow them to realize that their children are their biggest investment, and they need to take some time, and they need to research it.
And, you know,
they really need to invest in the knowledge, and not just, you know, give your kids over to a doctor without knowing exactly what they're doing to them.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is the one thing that he would say to me. He would say, Candace, don't even just take my word for it. Research it. Research it. Understand it. And so he never just jumped, you know, into things and into doing treatments that weren't proven to be successful. And he empowered parents, you know, to never give up. And that is something that we want parents to know, to never give up, because there are his fellow colleagues that are determined to carry it on, which is great.
Wow. That's wonderful. And, yeah, what a great response. And I'm sure that he would have loved to have seen the victory of the movie Vaxxed.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, he would have.
Yeah.
He absolutely would have. And I'm really happy for Dr. Wakefield. Very happy, because I feel he's been vindicated after years of what they did to that man. And I'm so happy for him. And this clearly has caused a movement that I don't think is going to stop anytime soon. So we're very excited.
Yeah, there's no question that it's all real now, you know, and it's pretty black and white, and there's no middle ground anymore. And I think that's exactly what the movie did. It definitely parted the ways for people to go, okay, there's some really systemic problems with the vaccine industry, and we need to really take a look at it.
And people have that right. We should still have that right to ask questions, to say, I want to know. I want to know what is in this vaccine that's going to go into my child. And I think for too long, we have been made to feel you can't ask that. You can't ask a doctor that. We just have to trust. And I'm sorry, as a parent, I don't just freely give my trust about my children to anyone. You know, so...
Except me.
Yeah. but we're parents together.
You guys are cute. No, that's great.
Yeah, so.
You guys are a powerful team, and you're doing great things.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're trying.
Well, you know, he was my older brother, and to me, it's therapeutic to continue to, you know, to work along the same lines, not as a doctor, but in helping this ship to get to its final destination.
And loving people through it and encouraging people through it, because it's a painful journey for these parents, and they do feel, I think, many times abandoned and alone and frustrated. And Jeff was just, he always gave them hope, so.
Yeah, interesting. I remember early on when we were doing all these conferences in Holland and Hawaii, and I'm really relational. I just love people, and I was just so overwhelmed with the pain of moms with little three-year-old boys that they just disappeared on. They're no longer their little boy. You know, they don't even recognize them. And I was just, I'd go home every night and cry, and you know, Jeff said, "Look, you just can't do that. We've got to stay focused.
Yeah, sure.
We've got to keep going."
Yeah.
And it is, it's extremely overwhelming.
Wow.
You know, I don't know how much you've spent time with parents that have kids with autism, but there's moms out there that sleep 3 or 4 hours every 3 days, and they've got 2 or 3 kids with autism, and you know, there's 24 hours screaming, and their kids won't eat, and they have diarrhea, and they paint the walls with it, and they're the whole time just plugging away, going, every second I have left over, I'm going to get on the internet, and I'm going to find something that's going to help.
Yeah. And when we started the Good News Doctor Foundation, I would talk to the parents that came in, got, you know, their information and their story, and I can tell you, every parent's story was pretty much the same, and that was their child was developing perfectly fine, and about 50, anywhere from 15 to 18 months old,
right,
they received a vaccine, and their child was gone. And this was back when they still had videotape, so I'm dating myself, but oh well. They would show me their beautiful, healthy baby.
It's so terrible.
And to see in their eyes, you know, just, you can see it in their eyes, and then the regression of their children was heartbreaking, and the sad thing is it still goes on.
Yeah.
It's still going on, and I've always said, you cannot tell a parent they don't know when their child has been injured. You can't. A parent knows. A mother and a father knows. And so that was over 15 years ago I saw that. So, you know, when people say, well, it's not just, you know, the vaccine, I understand that, because we said, you know, there's some other issues. But no, the vaccine of what I saw with these families took their child.
Yeah, we used to take our two-year-old son to these conventions, and he was 2 and 3. He was vibrant and alive and healthy, and parents would just look at him and cry.
And one actually looked at me, and she said to me, I didn't know her, and she said to me, she'd been watching me with my son, and she looked at me, and she said, he hasn't been vaccinated, has he? And I looked at her, and I didn't understand how she knew that, and I said, how did you know that? And she said, it's his eyes, and her son had been vaccine injured, and that's the first thing they notice is the blank stare, the no more listening to their name when they're called. But she knew, just looking at my son's eyes, that he hadn't been injured or had vaccine.
John and Tom, sorry. It for you, it breaks. I thought about that image. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I thought about that image that you just gave me of what it's like to think about. Because I can see that you put yourself in the shoes. You have a gift in empathizing, being able to feel what people feel.
Sure.
Which is different to sympathy, which is why it had such a bearing on your emotions, and your brother, like, trying to talk you talk you through it and all that, which is just really cool. But then, you know, these you know, you're talking about this mother that's spending a few hours a night every few days sleeping, and then in that little window that they get, they're looking for answers, and like, and I could see that you feel you can feel what it's like inside you, that desperation of just looking for hope, looking for answers,
right?
And they're actually looking for people like your brother. They're looking for your brother, and now they're looking for you guys, and they're looking for us, and they're looking for answers. And but just thinking about that pain and that struggle, and how desperately these people need hope. How does it make you feel, Tom?
Well, I think there's two emotions that really are difficult to process. One, and probably the most confusing, is since I don't have children with autism, it's hard for me to say, I get it, I understand. Because until you walk in their shoes, you don't get it. You don't have that feeling that your kid's standing right in front of you, but somebody kidnapped him. And, you know, I was incredibly blessed. But to know that they spend every ounce of energy, every penny they have, and now without my brother being there to be that pace setter, that guy that was knocking things out of the way so they could get to the finish line, it's tragic. It's terrible. People come up to me, well, what should we do? Where should we go? What should we see? I don't have an answer for him. I used to always say, you go to my brother. You know?
Yeah.
And we don't have that.
That breaks your heart, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. He was incredibly insightful, uniquely gifted to be able to look at a child and go, this is what you need to do specifically for your child.
Yeah.
Because you can't put a cookie cutter templated treatment plan on children with autism. You just can't.
They're all so unique and so different.
I mean, there are some basic things that help all children, but it's just not the case. Some respond very well to MRT. Some respond very good to mineral treatments and gluten-free diets and all the rest of the different programs. But you can't say that, without a doubt, this will work for your child. Now,
and you know,
there is some great science out there and some great products that seem to be the one. I know we were always looking for that silver bullet to kill this monster. You know, it seems that Jeff's work with Dr. Ruggiero, that is now just coming to completion, could be that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a dad. How can you have your kids so wounded that they don't even know who you are and not give everything you have for that? How can you not? And then it's so difficult on marriages that most of them end in divorce.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, how could you create something even worse than that? I mean,
it's mind-boggling. Or taking for granted that your child can say, I love you. Because I'll never forget that one mom who, it was down at the foundation.
Oh, right.
It was 7 years until she heard her child say that. I can't imagine.
Yeah, she was talking about how, you know, all the mothers around her were talking about their kids graduating from kindergarten and the big celebration, and they're going on to first grade, and, you know, they know how to read and write, and all she wants to do is hear her child say, I love you, Mom.
And she got it. She did get it. But some don't. And
what's that worth?
Yeah. And that's where, when you were talking about all the treatments and stuff, that's where I think there's just this huge void, because these moms are better researchers than the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're amazing. And Jeff would often say, he would say, I learned from all of you.
Right.
But what was so great about Jeff is, I mean, you have thousands of different treatments. He could put it together and go, this is what you need to be doing.
Right.
Because as parents, you're going to do anything to try to cure your child. So that means you're going to try every single thing that's out there, if you can, you know.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys were talking to me, you know, it's like one of the stories come up to my mind. Somebody, a really close friend of mine back in Australia, who actually, like, you know, your brother was like a hero to them, because, you know, that their second born son, autism, healthy baby, vaccine,
mm-hmm.
and then never well again after that. And
yeah.
and so they do believe it was a vaccine injury, to my knowledge. And yeah, and she was the first one to tell me about your brother, and it was just like a tragedy. And, you know, sometimes, like, this is somebody that you don't know on the other side of the world, but there
right.
are these people that were, it's as if their granddad died, or their brother, or their father, because of, I mean, this person was the hope that they had, and they were using the protocols that they were learning, and they were listening and waiting for the next discovery, and
right.
she was
absolutely
so sad.
Right. In fact, I think that was also incredibly overwhelming. After his death, it was overwhelming yet so encouraging and wonderful to hear from people, and we heard from people all over the world.
Right.
I mean, in the way that you just said, it was like their grandfather died. It was exactly that, and that we knew he helped a lot of people, but until you really start hearing all that come in month after month, it's amazing the impact that he had and the legacy that he's left, because he has. You know, there's doctors like Dr. Ruggiero who is continuing his work.
Mm-hmm.
And he's another just brilliant, brilliant doctor. So that, you know, that's where the hope is, too, is that it's not going to die. You know, because he was such an influential person and so passionate that you couldn't help but be around him and get that passion and that desire and... he was just such an encourager, too.
Well, I think because he had a child with autism.
Yeah.
And he had been around since, you know, 96, when it really started to explode. Because, I mean, autism was out there before 1998, but in 1998, things just really changed radically. You know, the percentages started to skyrocket.
Well, it was California. The state of California had a 600% increase in 89. So then it started impacting
right.
through then.
Okay.
So, you're right.
So, he was believable and he was trustable because he was a parent
mm-hmm.
that was trying to get his child well. He wasn't a salesman out there peddling false hope.
Yeah. And it wasn't all about the money for him?
No.
No, he was very giving, an incredibly giving person.
Yeah, he gave a lot away.
He did. A lot of treatments away, a lot of supplements, whatever they needed.
You know, he operated on Christian faith principles, and we're to pour ourselves out and to give ourselves away.
Yep.
And he was a living example of that.
He was.
Do you miss him, Tom?
Of course. You know, but again, like I said today, you know, I knew in 1998 at a conference in Orlando that he was leaving, because, I mean, our relationship was changing. Two brothers working together in a foundation down in Florida was changing because he was becoming bigger than life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Traveled a lot.
Yeah.
He gave his life to autism.
Yeah.
That's just... And we understood it really was his calling, and that's what he was here for. But in the same sense, it was hard. We didn't get to see him very much. We would, you know, see him at conferences and stuff. But he was always researching and always traveling.
Yeah.
I mean, he lived it and breathed it, so.
His family sacrificed great. His son, or, you know, Matthew and Elizabeth, his son and daughter, sacrificed a lot. He was not around a lot, you know. And they, but they understood that.
They do.
You know?
They're amazing.
He took great time and care explaining to them, you know, what their daddy had to do, and it was a sacrifice.
And they've really sacrificed.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that they're not angry and resentful and all that, because they could. But again, their father took a lot of time explaining to them why that, you know, God had given them the opportunity to do it, and he was doing it, and he was on a mission to make sure that it was eradicated in his lifetime.
Did he believe the vaccines cause autism?
That's a tricky question, because
I know.
We never had that direct, but I know the things that he expressed to me is that there's obviously immune problems first going on, and there's predisposed things, and the vaccines definitely don't help at all. And again, the vaccines are this one, one size fits all. We're not a one size fits all people. We're all uniquely made differently, so people react differently to them.
I could say this. Jeff never talked about his patients because of all the HIPAA regulations and everything like that. But I can tell you that he told me that his son has autism because of the MMR. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah. And again,
so I can only answer that about Matthew. I know that I have spent lots of time with him at conferences to know that, yes, the MMR was directly responsible for causing a lot of children to have neurological responses or neurological responses that eventually manifested themselves in this autism diagnosis.
Yeah, and even in his last lecture at Autism One, he does discuss it with all the neurotoxins that are in there and all of that. So he definitely did discuss it. And again, like I told you, just what I experienced with the parents. You know, this wasn't just hearing their personal experience and testimony on it. This was actual video of seeing that this is when it happened, and this is so many days after that it happened. So
he was showing you that?
But the parents were.
Parents
the parents were. That came in, we would do the intake and get all their information before treatment. And like I said, I had not one come in and say, no, you know, my child was, you know, never vaccinated but has autism. I'm not saying that can't or doesn't exist, but that was not the case back in 1999.
Yeah, there was a few.
And it was hundreds of parents.
There was a few that were born with autism or ASD, but it was a different type.
It was a different neurological disorder.
I mean, you could tell the ones that were born with it versus the ones that were a reaction to something else from an environmental, you know, problem.
When you're talking about this incident with the tapes, did he believe the parents?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The parents say, my child got vaccines.
Yes.
And he watched the footage and he believed
it. Oh, yeah. You couldn't not. I mean, I would really question somebody if you hear all that happened, and what I mean by that is, again, a lot of the similar stories, the high-pitched screaming, the sight swelling, it was all very consistent, so he did believe them.
Yes.
And would he be happy about the movie Vax getting out?
Oh, I think so, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. He'd be upset that he's not in it, but
That is true. That too, he wouldn't mind saying that. He'd say it himself, but I think he would be very happy also, like I said, for also Andy, because they did work together.
Yeah.
And he knows what he went
through. Yeah, he worked with Andy a lot, and the pain and suffering and all the problems that Dr. Wakefield went through was just
horrible. He's such a good man. He's another just great, great man, and that's why I'm happy.
Yeah.
Because I feel he's vindicated.
The Power to Cure, do you think that little short film got the facts wrong?
The short clip,
Oh, absolutely.
It did, but I will say I do understand the gentleman's passion and his heart. Because I emailed him, and I was just kind of like, where did some of this come from? And he just explained, just that was some of the stuff he had gone off of, and he does have a heart and a passion to get the truth out. And they're kind of, I think, in a different direction where it's more like a movie, whereas, you know, we're more looking for a documentary type thing. So it definitely got people's attention, though.
Yeah, and that's the good side of it.
It is. Right? It really is.
Yeah. And bottom line is your brother helped to change a lot of people's lives for the better and will continue to.
Yes.
Every day. And honor God by doing so, and honoring his family and their sacrifice, and his family will forever be honored for their contribution, including both of you, and then for your contribution, your individual contribution to this issue.
Well, we do feel obligated. You know, he gave his life for it. How can you not jump in and
jump on the train?
Say it's our turn.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
We'll be around.
You stepped in and took his place.
But well,
no.
I don't think anybody could take Jeff's place. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
No, thank you. But even though it was riddled with so much, such a hard road, and knowing that your brother's life was taken, you believe that?
Absolutely.
Tell me, like, was your brother's life taken?
Yes. I mean, I've looked at all the forensic information, the medical review. I've talked to the forensic scientist that went down there and spoke personally with the medical examiner. I believe without a shadow of a doubt my brother did not commit suicide, that his life was taken.
He was murdered?
Yes.
Can you say those words?
He was murdered.
And then instead of just turning away from that and saying it's too hard a path, you decided that you were going to take a challenging path yourself. That must have been fearful.
Think that, you know, he worked too hard for 20 years to have the last lap of his career tarnished like that and discredited and said he was a quack and, you know, he was doing all these unethical things and just decided it was too much and, you know, forget everybody else and I don't care about all these parents and kids and just take his own life. I couldn't let that happen. We talked about it at length, and there's just no way. It's my brother.
Yeah. And will
we loved him.
Will we know?
You have to honor him, don't you, Tom?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we have that sense of connection with the parents. We can't just abandon them either. You know, they all know that Jeff wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, they know that emotionally. Spiritually, but it was wonderful to sit down and talk to them and say, listen, forensically, because Jeff was a man of science. Forensically,
right.
We were looking at what happened, and it's, you know, you're right. You don't have to think that he left and he abandoned you and all he cared about was himself. It was, you know, it's not that black cloud that comes in the end of the fairy tale movie. It was all real and he was passionate to his very last breath. Well, I think I stated it earlier, you know, our children are our biggest investment. And if you're going to do something like vaccinate your child, that you really need to educate yourself.
Yeah.
Look at the data. Not just trust the doctors or at least, you know, come up with a bullet. There's bullet lists of information out there that you can ask your doctor. Do they know what's in the vaccines? Make sure that your child wasn't sick. I mean, you need to educate yourself before you even think about vaccinating. You know, and I would take that one step further, and I would say, don't vaccinate until we get to the place, if we ever get to that place, that vaccines are safe.